Hello, everyone, and welcome to session 12 of A New Republic of the Heart, a guide to being the change for real with Terry Patton. And today we move into chapter 11, It's Not Too Late and It Never Will Be. And now over to you, Terry. Welcome.
Thank you, Sherry. Hi, everybody. Well, this is kind of intense here. This you have now read this entire book, if you've kept up with our readings. And I'm coming to you from one of the parts of California where the air is clogged with smoke. And the last time we began, I was working out my disappointment that we didn't have an even more powerful blue wave. And since then, we've learned that it's perhaps a little better news than we had hoped, even though the sobering implications of how divided the country is sort of remain part of our picture, not just this country. So I want to focus as much as I can in this session on the depth of the way this book concludes. In a way, the most frequently encountered spiritual task in a human life is finding the strength or capacity for affirmation that are necessary to come back, to bounce forward after we've been dealt a blow. You know, when we're shaken, when we begin to fear that things are too much, that we will be crushed, that strength to come back with all of our capacity, you know, where does that come from? We don't know. And in some sense, the whole being has to ask for grace, has to ask for a source of unreasonable help that we just don't know where it is coming from. And so that's kind of what we, each of us, have had to do if we have suffered traumas or heartbreaking losses of people who are especially important to us, or otherwise had life events that have destabilized us. And so we are dropped back, we are thrown back often on where the heck does it come from? What is that? And that native consciousness and life energy that have been living us from the beginning of our journey, from our earliest memories, in the most ordinary moments when we have felt most mortal and like we're living in a dead world, always there has been another principle, a quality of light and consciousness, of mystery, of possibility. Sometimes we're in touch with that, sometimes we're not. But it is the source from which that strength flows into us when things are at their worst. And one of the paradoxes here in this particular work, most spiritual teachings help us to feel that radical mystery, that unreasonable source of blessing, that affirmation of being, and only concentrate on helping you cultivate personal excellence, helping you awaken, helping you discover your true life purpose, helping you find your way into your highest expression in whatever form that may be. And very often, spiritual work draws us into spiritual bypass. We get into a self-focus. We work on becoming more excellent, more happy, more free in a way that dissociates us from our context. So this work is different in that it asks us to do a yoga. A yoga is about, it's called the core of the word yoga is to yoke. The core of the word religion is to reconnect. And the nature of Tantra is the unification of opposites. So this work is a yoga. In some sense, it's primal religion. And it's tantric because it asks us both to, at deeper and deeper levels of our being, to discover our freedom and this, and to engage this primal task of sourcing an unreasonable source of awakeness and energy. And it asks us not ever to turn away, to flinch, to refuse to face all the things that are most difficult. Because we're in a time where this avoidance is epidemic. Sometimes it feels important for me to model for you, to show and demonstrate and show up in a way that shows my own vulnerability, because I know we all have it. And if we embrace our spiritual practice in a way that simply affirms our freedom, simply trusts being in a radical way and conveys an example of certainty and transcendence that seems untouched by the profoundly challenging dimensions of any human life, but especially our collective moment, which is the subject of this book, it suggests that we could be related to one another in a way that it lacks a certain depth. Our depth as human beings, our maturity, our profundity come from our ability to be with reality all together, to be with what is hardest and what is most wonderful. When you're with a friend who can resonate with your intuition of radical freedom, no dilemma, the contact with the grace nature of reality, that's a wonderful feeling, that you appreciate that person. That person is being with such an important part of you, if that's what you're in touch with. But in certain moments of our life, we're in touch with that which would tend to crush our spirit and overwhelm us. The town that burned down near me was called Paradise, California. Paradise turned into hell. The humidity dropped from almost 40% to less than 10% in a little over 12 hours. These hot, dry winds drove a fire to be the most destructive and lethal in the whole history of California. And I'm in a place that's now shrouded in smoke and has been for almost a week. I'm around people who are in and out of a deep dysphoria, a freaked out feeling, wearing masks when they leave the house, talking about how apocalyptic everything seems. And it's crazy to meet that experience only with that aspect of myself that resonates with the highest, happiest, most spiritually uplifted states. I have to be there with what's difficult too. This world is a paradise and a hell. And both are realizing themselves in our lifetimes. So here in this last chapter of this book, I'm, in a sense, offering a clarion call. I'm pointing out how this situation asks for my, for your, for our very, very best. It asks for qualities that are heroic or even saintly, that we couldn't possibly fully manifest and fulfill. Ask for more than we could ever hope to do. And we can respond to that in a way that says, oh, it's too much, I can't deal with it. Of course, that's not our practice. Or in a way that responds by recognizing this as an initiatory invitation, that there really is nobody else who's going to show up, as I say in this chapter. There is no one who will do this for us. We, as we are, flawed, imperfect, sometimes lazy, sometimes unconscious, not the most brilliant person in the world, but still, if we recognize this, in some sense, we're drafted. And that ennobles us. It asks of us strength beyond what we have, courage beyond what we have, clarity, awakening, self-discipline, all of the virtues, even more than what we already manifest. And that is not a basis for us going into any collapse. It's a basis for us to be recognizing that this is our time. We consented to be born in this time. I consented to be born into a world in which I would have to deal with this whole community I'm a part of being enshrouded in smoke for days on end. I am equal to it. I'm built for this trip. It's okay to be drafted in service of a mission that we can't fully perform in any vaguely perfect way, and to give ourselves to it as much as we can, and to meet each other in that gap, we can call it a gap, but to meet each other in that profound evolutionary tension, and to have it draw forth from us our capacity to perform the spiritual task of not being overwhelmed, of finding our very best, most patient, generous, understanding, self-compassionate, but functional excellence to our best capacities, have it summon from us our willingness to show up in every moment as a practitioner, to recognize each moment as a brand new moment and an opportunity to be our best, to wire the neurons that would be us showing up in a healthier way, never perfected, always willing, always growing. This is where we land, having finished our reading of this book. So, having invoked that, I want to invite us to take a moment to close our eyes and breathe, breathe to and from the heart, even putting our hand there to help signal this. We tend to locate ourselves behind the eyes, but we could just as easily locate ourselves here as we learned back in chapter 6, the esoteric traditions say that consciousness, the most profound seat of consciousness, is in the heart, at the origin of the heartbeat. And hear from our capacity to trust the heart's natural wisdom, its profound rest as consciousness, its intuition of the subtle animating energetics that are manifesting our experience. From the heart's natural capacity for appreciation and enjoyment and care, rooted in self-care and extending. We are all living beings evolving and deepening in this heart intelligence, this integral heart intelligence that reaches down into our gut and is in touch with all our best mental intelligence, where it's all integrated. In this place, instead of just going to fear and a mind of separation, we recognize all these challenges as initiatory. We let ourselves feel the sacredness, profound sacredness and depth of each moment of our living. We can turn to the mystery that is being us, the unknowable source from which we were birthed, the unknowable arms into which we will release in our dying process. And we can say thank you from the heart, from the gut, from the head, from every conscious cell of the body. We can appreciate this amazing gift to be alive now, able to see this 13.8 billion year arc of evolutionary history, this enormous expanding universe, this beautiful planet, and this inflection point, this tipping point that calls for our growth and evolution and our coming together. Okay, thank you. So in this book, I had the politically incorrect impulse to break a taboo and to ask a question for which none of us has a good enough answer, to create profound discomfort in you. And you've had the courage and integrity to be willing to endure that discomfort. And in this chapter, I'm essentially saying, you are called, we are called. I don't do this as, in the conventional way, the person challenging is supposed to already have met the challenge fully. The drill sergeant has already been through basic training. The challenging coach has already met the kind of difficult circumstances that the client is in and has the wisdom and confidence that the client is struggling to find his or her way into. Now we are coming into something together that no human collective has ever endured. All of us are being called beyond our capacities. So I don't challenge you in the conventional way. I challenge myself as I challenge you. I invite you into a different existential moment. This is where we are. This is an electrifying and empowering and amazing place for human beings to meet and to stay. I have a hunch that breakthroughs will come as we rest in our inquiry, in our not knowing, in our yearning to be the next possible human that we are sort of becoming and sort of falling short of being. I have a hunch that as we lean into this possibility with a sense of positive expectancy and a willingness to get our hands dirty, to do, to act, not to pretend or put on false faces, to be vulnerable and human, but to show up at our very best, to take seriously the possibility that if we show up at our very best, as if you were in training for a triathlon, as if this were the Olympic event that your whole life was wrapped up in, because it kind of is. Now, it's a marathon, not a sprint. We're not just training for a single day. We're training for a period of years, probably decades. So it takes a kind of patience and a depth. The capacities that we are asked to manifest in the next moment are baby steps toward a whole series of additional breakthroughs that we are asked to find our way into. We're asked to become our very best and to sustain it over time with others. I point out often that although I put the injunction before you, I'm really just putting words to the injunction that life has put before every one of us. And if I were not here to be of help, if I were no longer a factor, if I don't know, if I got caught in some awful disgrace and you didn't want to listen to what I had to say anymore because of whatever scandal, right? It wouldn't matter. See, I've just witnessed to you something that you will be faced with no matter what. It doesn't depend at all on me. We are together in an injunction given to us by the great teacher, the teacher to whom everyone is a student, teacher to whom all the teachers are students. And this is a human affair. So I hope we can have a conversation today of a somewhat different and deeper kind. I want us to be able to have conversations in small groups as a part of what we do. But I'm hoping that a few of you are willing to raise your hands. Several of you have asked pretty interesting questions, both on the course homepage, questions for Terry, and on the Facebook page. Some of them are quite long and a little bit more cognitively complex. And I appreciate those. They're sophisticated, intelligent questions that come from a serious intent to make a difference. I really respect these questions. And I would like to, I don't want to go into that cognitive complexity quite yet. I've asked a more primal question. is an existential challenge. There is that part of you that would like to, well, there is a part of you that I'm speaking to that is responding already the best you can and is up against your own edges. And I want to join with you in that. What are your questions in that place? What is it like to be in this place? Can we be in this place together in a way that deepens it and draws us more profoundly into it? I hope some of you are willing to engage me on that level. I invite you to raise your hand, please. Now, I want to, nobody has raised their hands, by the way, yet. So I hope you who are semi not wanting to raise your hand, I hope you'll take this as your personal cue. But while we're finding our way forward toward this, let me read you the first and last parts of this chapter. You may remember this from the deepening questions for the chapter. I pointed that the chapter begins, the bottom line is starkly simple. We are it. And it ends, let these be the most inspiring, exciting, meaningful, and deeply happy years of our lives. All the disaster and destruction and grief, including our own, notwithstanding, let's show up as the greatness of the human spirit in all the ways our predicament is calling for. It's time. So that sets the stage for us to have a different level of conversation. So Finley, thanks for raising your hand. Welcome.
I don't know if a question will form from this, but certainly I just want to say that I'm really appreciating this instruction to ask for the energy from who knows where, you know, to stay, you know, to stay in it, to kind of ride this arising, you know, at the edge of our capabilities or whatever, you know, so to that this asking is opening the energy to let it flow, to receive. And so in the opening, there's the energy buckets of it already there, you know. And, you know, I'm strange, sort of excited at finishing this book. I've got all of that going on. I had a kind of quite a strong conversation with somebody just today, and I'm kind of a little bit fueled by the adrenaline of that too. And it's all just built up into quite a crescendo just before this talk. And then this kind of, you know, and then a lot of doubts coming in, you know, all my usual things about whether I can, you know, do what's needed or whatever kind of come in. There's a lot of things in my life needing to kind of come together, really, and needing some action, you know, along the lines that of a new republic of the heart. So I'm just really appreciating that, just that very question of asking for you know, putting myself in the attitude of asking, you know, to cope with this and the energy. And yeah, so just thank you.
Well, thank you for leaning into that particular aspect of it, because it is the opening to grace that you know, it comes from here. I know that it's paradoxical, because of course we really do have to take responsibility for ourselves, and we it's unhealthy to displace responsibility for our lives. And, you know, there is an attitude of a no matter what personal commitment to integrity and authenticity. And then it's about me showing up. So I don't ask for that to be done by somebody else. I'm not childish. I'm not shirking that personal level of responsibility. And yet we're all asked for a level of response beyond anything we can be fully responsible, fully certain that we can do. And so there's an asking for an unreasonable new level of capacity to come in that probably won't instantly bridge the whole gap that we're noticing. Like to really rise to this moment, we would want to suddenly become a Martin Luther King or a Nelson Mandela or Mahatma Gandhi kind of a figure and somehow have an electrical presence that would electrify a crowd and help people to a new kind of shared understanding, and we would be able to compassionately and powerfully empower and motivate others in an amazing way, and every one of us would magnify our efforts, you know, through many, many others. And we won't suddenly be all that. We ask for help and we'll maybe be suddenly feeling a little bit of new capacity, but it might be just a small increment. You know, we might be the same as we were a moment ago, but 102% or 105% or 150%. Sometimes miracles kind of happen. There is, though, a paradoxical interactivity of these multiple dimensions of being. There is a quantum or spiritual level of being, a subtle level of being, a psychic, noetic dimension of being, as well as this material level of being. The world is gross and subtle and causal. It's a psychophysical realm. And if we can become concentrated, we do magic. I was listening to an interesting podcast yesterday with somebody who's a kind of rational practitioner of druidic magic. And he was defining magic in an interesting way. He was saying that magic has to do with noticing a symbol of something and imbuing it with a lot of energy, so that it's meaningful to you, such that your way of relating to it would create that in others. And it's kind of like a way of creating a psychic contagion, like a meme going viral. But it doesn't necessarily take the form of a meme on the internet or an idea, but it's some expression of health and wholeness being given the full force of your energy and mine, growing more and more. I'm trying to do that with this book, and you're coming along with me, and we're in something together. And our recognition that an unreasonable source of grace and wholeness is possible, and our insistence on that, our unreasonable insistence on that, it's an idea that can't be avoided. Our circumstances are going to bring that forward for others. So we really are asking with all our heart and soul for a new level of energy to enter each one of us. My prayer isn't just for me, it's for you. And when you align yourself to that asking, you get whatever forward benefit of my asking and of the asking of everyone else who's asking. We together are a call, a powerful call to the nonlinear quantum dimensions of existence that can create miracles. So what's going on right now is that we are, you know, continents away from each other, but we're right here in conjunction. And this is a psychophysical existence, a dimension. It has not just physical and not just mental, but and not just emotional, but psychic and spiritual and quantum, you know, gross, subtle, causal dimensions. And something is building in some of us. In some sense, we represent a new manifestation of the very vitality of everything that has driven evolution to the point that we could be us. And we are calling for grace together. You are, and I am. And there is a nonlinear dimension to this. And we can trust it. You have my blessing, but it isn't like just me. There's a great blesser whose blessing I have. There is the great orchestrator who's orchestrating us into this moment. And there is more that it is, that he, she, the goddess, the divine is intending for us. Evolution wants to keep evolving. Life wants to keep living, and it's alive here as us. Wow. Oh, you got muted.
I'm muted.
There. Okay.
I just said, yeah.
Well,
thank you.
A warm embrace, brother. We're, and we don't get out of this. Like, it's an intense moment. And in some sense, that intense moment never goes away.
Yeah, but this is building for me a lot, the intense moments. And outside of the intense moments, or at least when it's a little less, you know, in the sort of theory of being able to stay in it and the value of it and seeing it is all very well, you know, until I'm in the, then in it and in the conflict of the doubts, you know, that come up through whatever my conditioning is, you know. But now there's just really nice place to go in the asking, you know, and in the asking, as you say, you know, you're actually also identifying where you're connected, you know, where you're kind of in the sangha, you know, and all of that as well, you know. It's lovely.
Yeah.
I feel empowered. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Finn.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Eileen. Hi.
Hi, Terry. I just want to say what you were just saying. It was really inspired me. And it's exactly like that kind of like heart energy. And it was coming from someplace very deep. And it feels like there's some extraordinary power moving through that's going to be needed to get people motivated. Because what I'm finding, I'm in a group, we've been, of evolutionaries, we've been meeting for 6 years, and we have peer-led retreats twice a year. We get together regularly. And still, I wouldn't say most people are feeling self-motivated or I don't know what I was gonna say, the word discipline. I know that doesn't necessarily have that, you know, very contemporary, it's not very favorable these days, but of really putting the needs of the planet or the future or the future generations or even really the needs of the moment ahead of their own discomfort. And clearly we've all been conditioned, you know, to look after ourselves and to make a living or whatever is required. So I just, you know, here I am working with this group and still hard to get some movement. And I just wonder, you know, what's that extra ingredient? You know, what's the conditions at least that we can create? And the context we can create, there's more likely that infusion of that extra ingredient will come. That'll spark, you know, our hearts and get us moving.
Well, I really appreciate that question, and I rest in it with you. There will be an inflection point where people on a broader level are going to realize what time it is on the planet much more generally. And there will be some tendency to panic in that moment, but it will also bring out the best in many people. And there will be more and more of a movement that is, that has tens of millions of people, maybe hundreds of millions of people involved in it. We're going to become we seem like a little marginal group at the moment, but this is not how it's going to be. We're just we're early adopters of awakeness to our actual situation. And alas, there will be more extreme weather events and disasters, but perhaps also some positive, if we woke up tomorrow and discovered that there was a sudden, clean source of free energy that was going to completely take us off a dependence on fossil fuels, or a cheap, scalable way to capture and sequester carbon, or perhaps that the people who had these technologies were going to use the enormous economic flows that were going to come from those technologies to create a positive cultural change in a reasonably enlightened way. That would be a disruptive event too. that would make possible a lot that isn't here now. And all of these, I mean, those are pretty extreme in terms of how positive they are, but there are going to be breakthroughs, technological breakthroughs of real significance, whether they are as profound as the ones I just named or not. There will be some of those, and they will open up somewhat of a, in this chapter, I talk about how disasters open up windows of opportunity, but so do positive disruptions. And so our future will not be like the present, and it will not be any of the ways we expect. It's going to take us by surprise. And every one of us is going to die, and every one of us is going to have, who knows what it's going to be, but we're going to have wonderful, deep, satisfying, meaningful, joyful times ahead. They're going to be really good days, and they're going to be really bad days. And we eventually will be defeated by the process in the sense that we'll give in to the mortality of the body mind. And here we are, coming into a new level of contact with it all and finding within ourselves. I mean, I can feel that you get this, that a no matter what commitment has been growing in you for some real time and will continue to grow. You're in me, in this with me. We are in this together. And in this, we are a call to that unreasonable grace that we were just talking about with Finley. And there is something, when they do these supercomputer link-ups, or they get lots and lots of smaller computers and they get the computing power can be multiplied because of the way they're hooked up. They call that a massive array. And there's also something that in the esoteric world they sometimes do with crystals, where they arrange them together. Or there are these guys with the sacred geometries and so forth. The more of us who come into a kind of sync around this, we actually do get empowered as more and more people join us. We are doing this at the early end when we have relatively few of us. So our own efforts are bigger. We're getting a new pattern going. And at the beginning, that's hard. So it bears on us a lot. Go ahead and unmute yourself, Alan. I know you're saying a few. Eileen, but we'll just...
Eileen. Yeah. Exactly what you're saying. And just to hear that reassurance when we're just making, you know, in our community here, we're making maybe little micro steps, and that's enough, and not to say, well, if it's not going to be something big, what's the point? To know that it is also those small gestures and those, you know, creating connection with people that maybe we don't normally communicate with, and just breaking down some barriers and doing a little bit better is all moving in the right direction. And just that, you know, not to wait for the big, you know, the big news story. It feels like it is just going to be these little steps. So thanks for reminding me of that.
Yeah. Well, it's paradoxical. I talk a lot here about conversations, and I emphasize many different kinds of conversations. One of the ones that I emphasize is this deep we space, and that does require a community of the adequate. So you are in your local practice community, you're not quite getting the same level of clarity that we're having in this particular conversation. But you have a lot of shared ground. And then there are these people who, I don't know what the Canadian equivalent of a Trump voter is, but the people you don't see the same, you know, see things the same way with. And being able to communicate with them is important too. There are a host of communications that we're asked for. And it's very important that we do two things. One, that we do come to a Sangha like this that magnifies our capacity to be a new pattern, to make a radical step. That's not easy, and we need support. We need each other in this kind of Sangha. That's really super important. But if we just gathered with each other and reinforced this intention and didn't reach out to others and didn't extend ourselves and do these things, which sometimes seem like they're rather humble in what they're able to accomplish, that wouldn't be enough either. We do have to take it to the streets. We have to take it in whatever ways with all kinds of different creative projects. And we need then to really learn to restore each other. Like, I hope that you become more deeply rooted in this radical stance through this conversation and through this course, such that you'll be more and more of a source of this kind of unreasonable affirmation and commitment to others, and that this will just keep building. And even that process will sometimes be, you know, one step forward, two steps back, three steps forward, one step back, four steps forward, two steps back. I mean, this is hard. Evolution was always been a life or death matter. And so you didn't know how it was going to go. One of the things that's really important for us to recognize here, even though evolution does lean toward the positive, there is no guarantee of anything. And there's no guarantee that this awfulness of Trump's Republican Party will be defeated. There's no guarantee that the ecological fabric can survive the assaults that are already inevitable, perhaps even. And that what that means then is two things at once. One is it's really important that we play to win as though something is at stake and what we do really, really matters. And at the same time, it's really important that we know that doing the best we can, which will not be perfect, which will include some failures and lapses and lower qualities, that doing the very best we can is all we can do. And we are, in some sense, there's something, you know, the language is wrong, but you know, Christians will say that once they've accepted Jesus into their heart or whatever it is, that their place in heaven is assured. Like, there's something like that, there's something analogous to that that's true for us. We do the damn best we can, even if we fail, even if we go down, and even if part of it is us yelping in pain and fear as we get obliterated. Doing the very best you can guarantees a kind of authenticity and integrity to your whole existence. At a soul level, your success can be guaranteed. And so weirdly enough, we have to play to win as if it all met, you know, something really important hangs on it. In another way, the more we keep the faith, we cannot lose. Both are true. So, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to say that's also the message I got loud and clear when you did when you had that one conversation with Peter Russell a few years ago. You know, no matter what is on the horizon, to be in integrity with what we believe in and how we want to show up. And somehow that is a comfort. So thank you for that too.
Yeah, thank you, Eileen. Great. Okay, what time is it? It is time for our breakout groups. There's another hand up, but I think I will give us an opportunity to go in and have this conversation among ourselves. So here's the form of it. I will reread the first and last words of the chapter right before we go into the groups. And then I'm gonna ask each of us to speak in turn. And these are brief, but something good, really good, can happen even in a short time. And I want each of you to ask, you know, in what ways does this suggest a shift in your way of being? Where do you have a sense for a new possibility? We all tend to feel both sides of this, sometimes overwhelmed and sometimes feeling a sense of possibility. But for this exercise, let's simply speak in terms of our yes, in terms of what is possible. You have mixed feelings, sometimes you feel overwhelmed, that's okay. But speak where you do have a yes, you do sense possibility. And so, as usual, there'll be a minute to say hello, and then 3 minutes for person number one, 3 minutes for person number two, 3 minutes for person number three, and then 4 minutes where we all take turns. And let's go back to what are we experiencing now? After each of us does whatever honest, authentic expression of our yes is, what are we experiencing right now? So, Sherry, maybe you can go on and give people an instruction, but then let me come on and I'll read the first and last words of the chapter right before they go into the breakout.
Okay, sure. Sounds great. So in just a moment, once Terry reads the beginning and end again, then you'll see a pop-up on your screen inviting you to go into the breakout. Just click join breakout session. And we've done this a few times, so I'm sure you know what you're doing. As Terry said, you'll have 3 minutes each and then 4 minutes altogether. So what will happen is at the end of all of that, you'll have a 1 minute countdown on your screen and then you'll be automatically returned to the main session. So Terry, why don't you go ahead? I'll just also remind everyone to please be patient if you have landed in a group with no one else there. And please press ask for help, and then I will come and help you. Go ahead, Terry.
Great. So the chapter begins. The bottom line is starkly simple. We are it. And it ends. Let these be the most inspiring, exciting, meaningful, and deeply happy years of our lives. All the disaster and destruction and grief, including our own, notwithstanding. Let's show up as the greatness of the human spirit in all the ways our predicament is calling for. It's time. And then we'll each of us respond, speaking how this suggests a shift in our way of being and where we do have a sense for a new possibility. Thank you. Hi, everyone. Good to be with you. Well, I had a beautiful share in my breakout group. And I found myself saying at the end, what we are experiencing right now is some measure of a real we space in which this evolutionary possibility is alive for each of us as individuals in unique ways that are finding expression, but also in which the we, in which our place of our meeting is in this potential, in this aliveness. And I know the three of us, I think we're all quite moved by that experience. I hope you had some sense of that in your gathering with the others just now. Has anything come up for anyone that you'd like to share? I want to give you all another opportunity to raise your hand if there's something fresh in this moment that you'd really like to share with the larger group or ask me. Hi, Carrie. Welcome.
Hello again. What comes up for me when all this was going on is, I don't know if you're even up for this, but it sure would be nice if there was a sangha of sanghas, some way to, like when Ellen was talking, some way for small groups to have a little bit of guidance as we learn together, because it's kind of beyond all the individual work we've done. I mean, now I need to be comparing notes of how we evolve as an interbeing, and I don't know that there's any support out there really like that. I'd really like to hear from other circles as they work their way through this.
Well, that actually, one of the things that I will be sharing with you, you know, we're not going to meet next week because of American Thanksgiving being next week. So we'll meet for our last meeting in 2 weeks. But I wanted anyway, and you've just created the perfect opening for me to say that some of us are really alive in a very vital process here that really should continue. Ed gave voice to this last session. And I am going to offer a course where I will be able to get to know each person in it, I hope, a bit more, and in which there will be more of what you're exactly talking about, where we will have groups of people that we will work with over time that will not just be self-organized, but will have more holding by me and others, and in which we will create the beginnings of some level of metta-sangha. And we will include our personal practice and our we practice and our it practice, our outer work, as parts of that journey. Great. And I'm able to do that in a way that I can take responsibility for, but I have an open-ended commitment to this. And so one of the things that we've already done is to found this new nonprofit called A New Republic of the Heart. And there will be an opportunity for people to get involved with that as volunteers and to grow that. And that will be another context in which some of what you're talking about will happen. Although I can't give the same amount of time and energy to every individual, you know, there's a different contract in that context. But there will be there already is. We have a core group that's been meeting, and that there's increasing coherence and depth in how we are with one another, but also we're trying to, what do they call it, kicking ass and taking names. We're trying to actually make stuff happen. And there's an affirmation that you get from doing stuff together that's of a different nature than this more subjective work. And when the work has a subjective, objective, and intersubjective dimension, it really is integral. And that's where my work is heading. So I think of you as fellow evolutionaries who have your own, you have heard a call, and we are, and I am interested to serve your ability to be effective. And it's there that we're meeting. And that is kind of this meta sangha, this sangha of sanghas, where there is more going on. And so that's actually the purpose of the nonprofit, will be to reach out and offer services and inspiration to, you know, there are tons of people doing good work. If we can help the folks at Greenpeace, or if we can help the folks at Bioneers, or if we can help the folks at 350.org, or if we can help the folks, you know, folks in some local indivisible group doing political work in the United States, or if we can help folks in another sangha that's got deep spirituality but doesn't have a way to be activated and connected to their spirituality. There's lots of ways that we can serve this as a nonprofit as well. That can be our actual work. We can be a sangha of practice with each other, and part of our work is to do service in the world, and our service can be to help other sanghas do that. And that's what A New Republic of the Heart is about. So your question goes to the heart of my sense of mission in life, and how that, and that's shifted. That's only come clear to me, even really, it was somewhat clear before the book came out. It's implicit in the book, but it's gotten a lot clearer since I've been in dialogue with people. So thank you, Carrie.
Count us in.
Great, bro. That's beautiful. I want to invite everybody to consider something. This has been, I've never taught a course that has had as much content in it as this. I've mostly leaned, over time, I made my sessions with you less and less cognitively focused, and I haven't gone on at length about theory, because I've just noticed that the sessions have had more life when we've leaned into the feeling, existential, spiritual, intuitive challenges that all of this represents. But a couple of people have asked some really intelligent questions. You'll notice that on our Facebook page, there's a long, very, very long, but very intelligent question from, I think, Danny Lucena Plot about the quadrants. And was another really great question asked by just privately, you guys haven't seen it, by Joris. And I'm going to want to try to respond to those, but I think I'm going to do it by recording an extra Zoom video where I'm going to talk a lot of more complex theory in a more cognitive way, because I want our last session to be a more feeling experience. So if there are some other more theoretical questions and they get asked in the next day or so, I may be able to address them as well in the time ahead. There is a real value in understanding theoretically how we can do this integral work. The work is hard. It challenges us to evolve, to be, it's not just sainthood and heroism in abstract terms that we're asked of here. We're asked developmental transitions. We're asked for awakening to the mystery of existence and to a higher level, a higher state of consciousness. and we're asked to new higher developmental structures. We're asked for a new level of human maturity. And there are some things we can say about what we know about that. The problem with talking about it in those terms, and the reason I haven't been doing it in the last classes, is because we easily orient to all of this as if it were a problem we could figure out. And that reinforces the mind of separation. It is a fragmented stance. It's the limit of modernity. We're all meeting together in the midst of the abject failure of modernity, of scientific, rational thought and technology and the free market. And we're trying to use the same tools, a subject-object consciousness where we analyze, we derive principles, and we solve the problem. And we're up against something that requires a shift in our way of being. So I want to keep drawing us into this kind of enlivened intensity of presence with one another, where a new way of being can come from. So I've done that in the last sessions. Let's not just go into figuring it all out and going into mental mode. Let's stay with this existential, this profound, this different orientation. And with that as our context, we can have some rich intellectual considerations and not just fall into this disembodied brainiac thing of now I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to solve the problem. And we will each be grappling with unique problems and we will have our best theoretical sense of how to do that well. And then life will show up and life will throw curveballs at us and we won't know exactly how to handle them and we will have to improvise in the moment. And so we'll have to be cultivating our way of being and becoming more profound beings who can spontaneously show up in the great improv skit that is life. Life is a big improv skit. And hey, you're it. What can you do with it? And we're going to show up for that with some theory behind us, with some distinctions behind us, but with life showing up. The territory is where this happens, not merely the map. And so our theoretical distinctions will be helpful to us and they will never be sufficient. So I'll record a video for you, not today, probably tomorrow or Friday, and I will speak to these theoretical questions and we'll get it posted. But and there'll be an audio of it as well. We're not done. I want to have a further conversation with you all, but I want to thank you for taking this journey and reading this book and taking it to heart. It's what I care about most. It's what I think is most important, and you've honored it by giving it your time and your attention. And I'm truly grateful. So we're not done. We're coming back in 2 weeks, but have a happy Thanksgiving if you're in the United States. Have a happy week, 2 weeks, wherever you are. And let's say goodbye to each other. Let's open up our audio and our video, turn on our video. Thank you, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you, Carrie.
Bye.
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 Have a nice day. Bye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
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 Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Grateful for you.